Welcome to Digital Leaders. My name is Fabian Tausch, and this is the show where I'm interviewing the digital leaders of today to educate you, the digital leaders of tomorrow. Today's guest, I'm following this person for 6 to 12 months already, watching a lot of his YouTube videos. And yes, he's a YouTuber, but he's not a classical YouTuber with comedy or music or whatever is happening there. He is explaining complex topics very simple for everybody in 10 to 20 minute videos, which is honestly quite long, but he has 1.8 million subscribers, and I really love the documentaries that he's doing. I was just sending out an email 2 weeks ago, and he responded, "Yeah, let's do it. I'm in Barcelona this weekend." And so I flew in to Barcelona and met Dagogo Altrade, and we were talking about the journey that it took to become a successful YouTuber, but also what his plans are to take it onwards and to bring it forward, because he has a lot of interesting things in mind, how he can develop and how he can move on. And I really love to understand decision-making processes and what people think is the future. So that's what I'm talking about with Dagogo. Have a lot of fun with the podcast interview, and see you after the interview. Until then, enjoy. But first, I need to introduce a sponsor. Today's sponsor is Zefdesk. Zefdesk is a cloud-based accounting software, and I use it for 1.5 years now. And I write offers, invoices, keep track of all the taxes I need to pay, and how much money is really in my bank account and I do not owe to the tax department. And the great thing about Zefdesk is that accounting becomes quite easy. It's cool, as I mentioned, because you can automate processes like offers, invoices, taxes, and all the things you need to prepare for your tax department or for your tax consultant, depends on how you're handling it. You have integrated online banking, and you have the opportunity to really see everything, and you have some artificial intelligence that recognizes all the invoices that you put in, your physical ones that you create a photo of and upload it, and then everything is in one place. And I'm really thankful that they approached me, because I always love to work with brands that I know and that I use, and I just didn't need to think about it. Because it's, of course, very hard today to see in the influencer marketing world, is somebody really using the product? Isn't he? And I use it for 2 or 3 companies now. So I use it for 2, and I plan to use it for the 3rd one as well. And That's why I feel quite comfortable to use or invite Zefdesk as a sponsor. They now serve nearly 100,000 customers. And what they offer for listeners of the Digital Leaders podcast is 25% off for the first 3 months. So if you think that accounting is hard, tough, a lot of paperwork, just making you crazy, and you want to automize some accounting processes or nearly everything, and you're looking for a tool, you should definitely try out Zefdesk. So the first month, I think you can, or the first 14 days, you can try for free, and then you can use the coupon code DIGITALLEADERS25, and I will link down below the website where you can use it. And then you have 25% off for the first 3 months. The code is valid for till the end of 2019, so till the 31st of December. And as mentioned, I'm using it. I'm very much a fan. I really appreciate it. My tax consultant loves it because it eases up a lot of processes. And for me, it's one of the best software as a service tools that I could use. Of course, there's some other stuff like Slack and other software tools that I use as well, but this is my only accounting software tool. I really love it. I would recommend it if you would ask me. So that's why I'm also happy and thankful for Zefdesk. Go check it out. You have all the information linked below in the description as well. And let's get started with the interview. Welcome to the Digital Leaders Podcast. Today I'm sitting in Barcelona in an Airbnb, and to be honest, it's quite interesting how I landed here, because on Monday I did send out an email to a YouTuber that I'm following for a longer time, and I discovered him over a friend who sent out a newsletter with recommendations. And I was looking on the YouTube channel, a specific video, but I don't remember which one. And I clicked on it and I was like, okay, I definitely need to subscribe. And then at some point you were summing up the Neuralink presentation that Elon Musk gave a few weeks ago. It's weeks. And the interesting thing is, in this case, my guest mentioned that he will be in Europe, and he's originally from Australia, or living at least in Australia. I'm not sure if you're originally from there. You can elaborate on that in a second. But I was like, okay, Europe sounds good. But I didn't realize that I could ask you for an interview. And then I watched the newest video and I was like, okay, now I need to send out a message. 30 minutes later, reply. Okay, would be in. I'm in Barcelona from 9th to 14th of August. And I'm like, sounds good. I'm in Ibiza from whatever to the 10th. Ibiza, Barcelona, easy stopover. And then I decided, okay, I'll fly over. And now we're sitting here and I'm talking to, and I definitely need to look up the last name because otherwise I might mess this up. Dagogo. No, I don't see it. Altrade,
yes.
Okay, perfect. From Cold Fusion TV. Thank you very much for joining. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Was it correct that you're from Australia, or are you just living there?
So I was born in India, and I lived in the UK for till I was 5, and then I moved to Australia. So yeah, for the past 20 plus years, I've been in Australia. But my parents and background is Nigerian, so that's the full spiel.
Good to know. Cold Fusion TV is a YouTube channel that's now, first of all, you have 1.8 million subscribers.
Correct,
today, yep. Roughly. Mm-hmm. And you're doing documentaries about different topics. I always explain it like you're taking complex topics, break it down for everybody that everybody understands what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I never talked about documentaries, but when we talked before the interview, you were talking about documentaries. So I had a bit of a different side on how I explain it to others. But what you do is take, for example, the video that I think a lot of people, I think it's the most watched video so far, is the Samsung story as well.
Yeah,
I think it has like more than 10 million views about what Samsung is doing. And your videos are about curious or topics to make others curious and to stick ahead. Of course, that's what you need to do with the video. And what I learned, for example, and there are a lot of more things, and I will link the video below, is that Samsung built a Burj Khalifa.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. Every time I watch your videos, I learn something new. And that's why I return, for example. And that's also why I want to interview you. And that's why we're sitting here, because I would love to know where this comes from. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what we're talking about now.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it before the interview a bit as well. But when did you start, and how did you think about starting a YouTube channel?
Okay, so I guess when I started would have been all the way back in 2009, and that was totally different to what I do now. So I was studying engineering at the time, and I was always interested in that kind of thing, but I kind of stumbled into YouTube by accident, mainly because when I first started, it was I just kind of was playing around with Android, the operating system by Google, and I just found some cool customization stuff that I hadn't seen before anywhere else, and I thought would be interesting to just put online to see what people thought. And the video kind of blew up, and I became kind of known within the XDA community, which was a bunch of modders that modified Android software and did different hacks and all that kind of stuff. And so I was known around that community, and I kept making those videos. And then I kind of moved on to smartphone reviews. So I reviewed a few phones, and I kind of did it with a little bit of a difference. I'd kind of tell a little bit of history about the brand, and then I'd review the phone and shoot the review, but kind of do it in a different way. And then I thought I'd kind of put more, I thought there could be more that I could be doing. I felt that this was quite limiting myself. So I kind of took my genuine curiosity about the way the world is and how things came to be and, you know, how things that we see every day, like, actually, yeah, started. So I made a video called How Big is Google? And it was basically the history of Google, its size, and some interesting facts about it. And that video really blew up and got shared in a few places. And I thought there could be really be something here. And that was 2013 that I did that. And that was kind of the start of Cold Fusion, as I guess it appears today.
It's always interesting when people think about, and use this word carefully, but YouTubers. Mm. And everybody thinks that there is this one tipping point where everything starts. And you mentioned it, and you had one video that blew up. But since then, how did the channel develop? And how much effort do you put in to really produce quality of content and also try to grow your brand?
Mm. Yeah, so since that video, I guess the amount of effort I do put in is quite a lot, because I really want to make sure, like, it's something I would watch myself, and it's something that a lot of people can jump into and still be engaged. It's not something that's going to be isolating a bunch of people that aren't interested in technology. It's basically for a general audience of, you know, any age, most demographics. You should be able to sit down and watch it and be interested in what's going on, and it has some kind of meaning to you. So that takes, like, a lot of effort to think about how each video is going to go, because you can start making a video and then by the time you're three quarters through, you can be like, well, you know, this kind of person wouldn't like this aspect, or this other person wouldn't like this kind of aspect. So it takes kind of like a very internalized look at what you're doing to try and appeal to the most amount of people. But in terms of growth since then, it's been quite steady. So that video blew up and it got a bit of traction. And then just over the years, it's kind of just grown linearly, I would say. So yeah.
The reason why I ask this question is because today, I think, especially people in my age, and I'm 22 years old, always want everything now. Mm-hmm. And everybody thinks, hey, I just need to make one thing right, and I put in effort once, and then I have everything I need. Mm. And what you mentioned is that you're now doing it since it blew up the first time for 6 years, and before for 6 years. Mm. So you're doing this for 12 years. Maybe not always
actually full-time. 10, but yeah. Since 2009.
Yeah, was it 2007? Yeah. Yeah, okay, 4 years before you had the first really blew up, and then six more. Why was it 2007? Okay, no matter. It's the same 10 years, and you're now a very well-known YouTuber. But today, everybody wants it in a second. And I think it's very important to mention that there is a lot of effort, a lot of time, and a lot of things that didn't work out until there was something that worked out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because I think a lot of people always see the end result. They see, oh, this is, you know, big YouTube channel. You know, they don't really see all the time and, like, that's put in and all the effort and thinking and just how long it takes to build that up. And another thing is also consistency, because it's really, you know, you just have to keep going and, like, just not stopping it. You know, like, when you feel like things aren't working out, or you're not growing as fast as you think you should be, you have to just keep being consistent. And I think in today's method of thinking, like, everything is instant. Like, you know, everything is on your phone. If you need to get somewhere, get a direction, or Google something, it's just a click of a button. And I kind of guess that changes your way of thinking in a way. And also seeing all these people, like, instantly blow up kind of thing. You can be forgiven for thinking that, but there is a lot of work that goes into it behind the scenes that people don't realize.
Hey, you just see a 10-minute or 15-minute video each week and think, yeah, that shouldn't be too complicated. Of course, everybody who knows more about video production and research and everything knows that there's a lot of effort in it, but we also just don't think about it. We just want to see the end result, and we don't even want to know what journey you had behind each video or the whole channel most of the times. Of course, there are some diehard fans that dig deeper into the topic, but most of them want just to have and consume the end result and move on. And I think it's just interesting. That's why I was mentioning it. And at the same time, with the you want now the journey, because I always think people lose focus to the journey, and the journey is what needs to be fun as well. But of course there are hard times and stuff that doesn't work out, and you have to have some consistency not only, but also competency with stress and everything else to deal with negative feedback, for example. So how often, or were there moments, and how did they play out, where you thought, okay, I'm not sure if I will continue?
Yeah, there's one particular moment that springs to mind, but I guess it was quite early on. So this is when I was doing my phone review still, like in the later stage of that. I put a lot of effort into these videos, and then I was seeing a lot of people that just, you know, single shot just did their thing and got like six times the views I did. And this was happening over and over again. And I was still living at home at the time, and I remember going to my sister and being like, I don't think this is going to work out. I put so much effort in and nothing really happens. And everyone else just kind of seems to point and shoot a camera and just get so much more like traction and growth. And then she just said to me, like, you know, you don't really see the end result of where this could go. Like, listen to the feedback that you're getting. Because at the time, people were telling me that this is unique and this is different and I'm really enjoying this. But I didn't see that. I just said, looked at the numbers and said, it's not happening. I'm going to give up. So kind of listened to what she said and decided to keep going with it and keep toiling away. And I guess it worked out in the end. So yeah, that's one moment that does spring to mind that I just thought, throw in the towel and give up.
So for, I think, 2 months now, you also have a podcast. When did you decide to do one? And what are you focusing on in the podcast?
Sure. So the podcast was actually, it wasn't actually my decision. I was thinking about it, but I didn't really have the time at the time to actually start and get all this going. But there was a group that externally approached me from LA, and they liked the content that I was producing, and they said there's a big opportunity here to turn what you're doing into an audio podcast to open yourself up to a new audience. So of course I was like, you know, this sounds good. Like, they'll take care of a lot of stuff on their end, and you know, I'm producing the content already, it's just transferring it into an audio version. So I thought, yeah, this sounds great. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, there's more that could be done here instead of just doing audio versions of my videos. So at the moment, that's what it is. For the first 2 months, it's just audio versions of my videos. But in the future, I'm going to start interviewing people that are my subscribers from YouTube, but also are experts within industry. So, say someone's working, in a artificial intelligence startup, and I could get their views on what's going on. And I guess it's more of a way of building a community that can actually have their voices heard and opinions heard and generating discussion, but in a, you know, audio format. So that's the future of what I'm thinking about in the podcast.
How did you involve your community before?
Mainly through Twitter polls and posts, and just have discussions on there. Sometimes comment section discussions. So yeah, that kind of thing. Mainly just like written social media is the way that I'll do it. But I think this is something a little different, a little way of building community in a different way.
Do you think, because a lot of people talk about this, community is the thing that really makes or breaks your brand?
Community can be very important, I think, because there's the way I could put it is there's like a saying called wisdom of the crowd. So it's kind of like a lot of people who have a similar interest in whatever, they like when you ask them a question, or like the right and best answer usually just rises to the top. So it can get you, in terms of like topics, choosing topics or like what you should talk about, that can be quite good. And I think that will make it appeal to, you know, even more people within that community. Cause like if you're just doing something on your own, without asking anyone, you can kind of sometimes choose topics that wouldn't actually resonate. It's good to you, but to a lot of people, it may not be. So I think that is important, but I'll be honest, I don't think I've relied on community very heavily so far, but I think I'm going to start integrating it a bit more moving forward.
You mentioned one topic and it's about topics that I wanted to ask about. How do you decide on topics? Is it always with the community? Is it a balance between community and I love this topic, I will research it? And then how do you start going into research? Because I think a lot of people don't know anymore how to research anything. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a good question. So when it comes to deciding a topic, there's a few different categories. So one can be like something just news just broke about something. So for example, Elon Musk's Neuralink, that was just a presentation that just happened. And I was like, you know, I saw an opportunity because the presentation that they did was kind of not very sequential. It was all over the place and 2 hours long. So I said, if I could just make this a 10-minute video and just step through like everything that's happening and just explain it, I think that would be a good video, which ended up being. So that was like a topical news kind of video. And then there's others where I've been thinking about something and I think, oh, this would be interesting for people to know. So I go about researching into that and see if it's a good fit or not and go from there. And then other times I just, ask community. But I'd say maybe 40% for the first two, and then community is like the other 20%, I'd say.
Okay. And how do you start researching?
So researching, so that's an interesting point, because before this year, it was just me doing all the researching. So it would start with, you know, news articles, or if it's like a deeper research, then journal articles and all of that kind of thing. Watching a lot of, you know, if there's a company doing something, watching what they're doing on YouTube in terms of like their promotional stuff and all of this. And just basically going to a lot of sources and coalescing all of the information into one place and then making a narrative out of that. So that can take a while depending on how long the video is. If it's a short video, then, you know, 1 or 2 days, but if it's a longer video, it can be up to like a couple of weeks. So that's very dynamic. But up until this year, it was just me doing all of that. But I've recently got another researcher on board who helps with that at the beginning of 2019. So yes, the two of us kind of doing that now at the moment.
Before I ask about your team, how do you evaluate sources? Mm-hmm. I think it's so hard.
It is. And there's a lot of misinformation now. And sometimes you do get it wrong, and you have to admit that happens. And literally it's a bad source. Like there can be an article written on Wired that can just not be right. Like it's hard. Like you can't really completely mitigate it, but you can just do your due diligence and try and find like at least two sources for everything, or, you know, depending on how much you want to do. But not 100% can mitigate it, but you can do due diligence and what you do.
Okay. So you talked about employing a researcher or a freelancer, however, for the research part. How large is your team, and when did you start build around yourself?
So the building started, 2019. So I have a researcher, as I mentioned. He's from the same city I am, Perth, Australia. He reached out to me and I said, let's do a trial run, and he ended up being brilliant. So he's an engineer by trade. He works in the engineering field. So it's good to have someone with a technical background as well to help out. So it's not just, you know, you see any article and you're like, oh, that's real, when it isn't from an engineering standpoint. And I also have a animator who sometimes steps in and does like absolutely like brilliant 3D animation. But that's quite rare, like that I use that. But sometimes for like infographics and stuff, when I need to show it, then I get him on board. And if you noticed in my videos, the intro and outro clips with the spinning diamond, that he did that. So yeah, so those are the two guys that I have.
Would have thought that there is more than, let's say, one person that did it until the end of 2018, and then two people that are joining 2019. Crazy. Respect.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was a lot of effort, and a lot of people think for the longest time I've been a team, but it was just me. So
that's why I love to talk to people that are doing stuff, because you always learn something new.
Yeah, exactly.
About them and everything else they do.
Yeah.
I had a question in mind that I wanted to ask, but do you see yourself as a news, education platform or YouTuber or influencer, or how would you describe yourself and what you're doing?
So in present day, like now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm literally...
And you can also elaborate on how it's developed.
Okay. So like right now, I think I'm like in a strange nexus between education and news. So it's the way I would... Yeah, education and news is kind of where it kind of all most of my stuff sits. I wouldn't say I'm an influencer in terms of brands and, like, you know, getting brand awareness to different brands and anything like that. And I don't think I'm a real general YouTuber as well, because I think my stuff, the videos can be posted on anywhere. It's not really in the typical YouTube format. It's education and also entertainment's there a little bit, but just to keep people watching. It's not fictional. News. But for the future, I think I'd like to be like a standalone production company that creates videos, on science, technology, business, and history, like kind of all in the one. And maybe sell that to other companies and that kind of thing. Yeah.
I need to put you in contact with some friends of mine. They are producing content for pupils.
Okay.
So they are summing, like, they do what you do with school content. Okay. And they automized it and translations and everything else. And they multiplied everything they do and now also sell out to companies. And
okay.
I see that what you're doing is similar what they are doing in a different niche.
Right.
So maybe they are a good fit to
get
to
some
talk
advice.
To.
Yeah.
So maybe they have some insights. I don't know. They have in total over all their German channels about school stuff, 2.9 million subscribers as well. So it's not like I say, hey, you need to talk to somebody who has 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's really cool.
So maybe I can put you with them. So you use your reach as well to publish a book.
Yes,
so
that's correct.
And I admitted to you before, I haven't read it because on Monday you told me that I can interview you. I was on vacation and did not download the book before, or could I even... Is there an audiobook as well?
There is an audiobook, yes.
I could have done it.
That's
okay, my
all good,
fault.
All good.
Because ordering would have been too close, but I could have heard it. My fault. When I'm thinking about it, I was like, that's stupid. But so what is it about? How did you, or when did you start thinking about a book? And how is the process? Because I think it's different from creating a video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess we'll start with how, like, it all started. So once again, like, I wasn't really thinking about writing a book, but in 2017 there was a publisher that saw my work and, like, really appreciated, like, what I was doing and said, you know, do you want to write a book? So thought about it for a bit and I was like, yeah, sure, that sounds good. But it was a lot harder than I first anticipated. So it was about a good year of writing, and it was hard. Definitely different process to creating a video. Different but similar in some ways. So, like, you'd write, you know, the whole overarching thing and then you try and tighten it up and do, like, an iterative process, which is sometimes what I do with video scripts and with videos. So I guess in that small way it was similar, but in other ways it was, like, quite different, like, in terms of just the sheer amount of research that had to go in and forming a distinct narrative as well throughout it was quite hard because it had to be easy to follow and an easy read, which it ended up being. So in terms of what the book's about, it's a massive story. So it's about basically the history of humanity, but from the aspect of the stories of the people who invented everything, from the automobile to the plane, to, you know, the rocket, to the microchip, to, the iPhone and artificial intelligence. So who these people were, what drove them to do what they did, and actually how they all link together. So it's all weaved together and you find out that different people influence different people, and you find that pretty much every inventor built on the shoulders of someone previously. And there's many stories in there which people just don't know, and, like, everything you see around us came from somewhere. It didn't just exist. So it's kind of digging in and finding out where everything came from and who made it and the big story of how it all came to be, and also, like, a little bit about the future, what could happen. So
basically, if I read it afterwards, I know why we're having what we have today and where it will go, and think about where it's coming. For example, the light bulb is quite known who did it, but I understand how things happened and really think about things that are in my environment, and I might not even realize them
exactly.
day by
day. Exactly. Like one guy said that it gave him a new perspective, like a review, so that it gave him a new perspective on the world. Like he could look around and understand where everything came from. It was really great to write hard, but great to just put all those things in one place. And I don't think I've really seen a book like that. It's kind of something that I always wanted to read, but it's... Yeah, it's an easy enough read and doesn't get bogged down in a lot of stuff. So,
how do you market your book?
Mainly through the YouTube channel. So, I've initially said there's a book coming out, you can get it if you want, kind of thing. But now I'm starting to do separate stories from within the book, and I'm starting to do a video of that story, and then kind of say at the beginning of the video that this is from that book, and then at the end I say if you want to know more you can download the audio book or get a physical copy. And so that's the main way I'm promoting it at the moment.
Okay, by the way, the book is called New Thinking, and I will definitely link it down below, and I will link down Amazon. I think is the easiest way for everybody to find it. You mentioned that there is an audiobook as well. That's
Audible.
What I would definitely prefer personally, because I'm just on the road all the time, or too often, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I just prefer audiobooks, and I will link it down below. So that's definitely something I will listen to, even when I didn't do it as a preparation for the podcast.
Oh, good.
You mentioned before that you want to evolve to a production company. What are the next steps that you have in mind to do so?
So I guess like the rough 5-year plan, like would be really building this team, building it out a bit more. So it's like, it kind of can work more automated in a way, and make sure that, yeah, everything's robust in that sense. And then I guess we'll be like approaching different places and see who wants to take it. But really first before that, like I want to make sure everything's like really polished and really like, no, flawless before I start approaching people and see who wants to take it on. Because I've been asked a few times, like on different services like Roku and from like streaming services from that are just startups and all of this, that want me to start, like they're like, we want you as an early person on this platform. So I know that there's some demand out there, but if it's going to be bigger players, I've got to make sure everything's up to scratch. So
what I think, and I realize is through several points that you mentioned, that you are always getting approached for things. So how do you handle hundreds of opportunities over the years and decide what is worth taking and what is worth leaving?
It's a good question. Usually you can quite easily discern, like, so, you know, you can get like heaps and heaps and heaps of requests for people who are starting blockchain startups and stuff like that, and you read it and it kind of makes no sense. Like, you know, blockchain and AI trying to, I don't know, create new watering system for plants or something. It's like, it's not really going to be much benefit for me, and it's just not going to be a good collaboration. But there are some that you think that it could work out in terms of having, you know, just mutual benefit for both parties, I think is the most important thing. And yeah, it just comes down to discernment, really.
How much do you have in mind where you want to go when you do take such decisions?
I do want to, probably have like a full company that's publicly traded and, you know, has investors and stuff, but it's quite far down the line. But yeah, I guess all the way, really. Yeah.
Crazy. So you have a lot of things in mind, and you are how... That's something I think is interesting. I'm very bad in goal setting and planning ahead because I don't even know what happens in 2 weeks. On Monday, I didn't know that was quite sure that I will fly to Ibiza, but I was not sure that I will fly to Barcelona. So I'm very bad in planning ahead. Of course, I have a bigger vision, so 5-10 years, but I have no freaking clue what happens in between. Are you this kind of person, or are you planning more structured?
Yeah, like that's a good question. Like, I guess I do plan, like in terms of like, you know, what I want achieved in terms of like, you know, you can't really plan on a weekly basis. It's not very beneficial. But say, you know, 6 months, like every 6 months, I want this done. Like I should have, you know, try and put output this many videos, increase by this much, and you know, just try and get things tighter with like the staff that I'm working with and everything. But yeah, like in terms of the long term goal, it's quite hard to actually concretely plan how it's going to get there. So it's really just working on like a time frame that you're comfortable with, and then like eventually like knowing the direction that you're going to go and eventually landing there.
Because when you mentioned in the Neuralink video that you have pre-produced all the videos that you were publishing when you're in Europe, I thought, okay, seems like you're very structured and organized regarding this stuff. So I'm always thinking, is it one part of the of life where people are structured? Is it every part that they are structuring, or how is it? Because they are different.
Yeah, yeah. So with that, like that was a lot of hard work to get all the videos done before I left. So and that's probably the first time in a few years that I've been.
That would have been my next question.
Exactly. Yeah, in a few years that I've been that comfortably ahead in terms of production, and I guess having someone else help with the research helped bring that forward. But in terms of every aspect of my life, I don't think I'm as organized, no.
But is this, besides a podcast interview, real vacation for you? Or and how do you plan vacation, for example? Because nowadays, everybody is like busy all the time. And I think it's so interesting to understand how to relax and how to de-stress and everything.
Yeah. So this, as I said, like I've never been this far ahead before. So usually when I go on a trip, there's still work to do. So I didn't want that this time. I've had it for so many years and I was like, I want to just relax. So that's why I pushed so hard to get all the videos done. In terms of planning a vacation, like, so me and my girlfriend actually, like she planned most of it because I was too busy. So I kind of just went along with it. But yeah, it was good to actually just unwind and relax. And like, I'm kind of looking forward to getting back into the work cycle now and all of that. So
it's funny because I told you that I have always the fear of running out of content, and I have like 15 to 20 interviews prepared. So that's not the problem. I just need an hour per interview or maybe 2 hours to prepare it. But still, that is, if you have a lot of things to do besides that, different and hard sometimes to think, oh, can I publish more, or how do I schedule everything, and can I take off a few days or not? So nowadays, where everybody's sometimes busy being busy and sometimes busy with stuff that also is relevant to what they are doing, I think it's quite interesting to understand how people are managing their lives. But also what I think is interesting is, what habits do you have that you can't live without, that you also think are some of the reasons why you became who you became?
Yeah, I think one of the main ones is tracking time. So like in terms of what, you know, what tasks you're doing, and also like pay attention to how efficiently you're working. Like if you're tracking your time and you're just kind of like you're researching, for example, and you're opening and closing windows and you're not really doing anything, then kind of take a break, come back to it, and then you'll probably work better. And sometimes, like if you've been working all day, sometimes it's more efficient to stop and then come back early in the morning and do it rather than working through the night with 50% efficiency. So I guess it's all about learning, like, you know, how you work best, and you're making sure you have, you know, you have an idea of how much you've worked and that kind of thing.
Are there more habits that you really focus on? So I'm not a habit person. It's not like, hey, you don't have habits. It's more like understanding different kinds of habits might be relevant.
Go through it. Nothing really on the top of my head. Yeah.
Also interesting, because there are people that are trying to do everything in habits, and then there are people that are not, and some in between. And so I always love to understand how the person ticks.
Yeah, sure.
So when you now publish the first book, and of course you want to sell this further and promote it, but do you already think about a second book, or how far ahead? You mentioned that you plan far ahead, but when it comes to the specific things like a book, for example, do you already plan a second and a third book, or are you more relaxed?
So I guess the first book, like, it gave me an idea of just how much work it was. And really, I think while I was writing this, it was very hard to keep up the YouTube channel. So I think for the foreseeable future, like maybe for the next 3 or 4 years, I don't think I'm going to write anything else. So I'm just right now really focusing on the YouTube channel and building this team, and that's the focus. So I can get productivity up and more content out, better quality, that kind of thing. Because I think, sorry, just because as you said, like there's always been a lot of people approaching, and it's kind of like everything comes from the YouTube channel and goes out to other things, like the book, for example, the podcast. That's all from the quality of the YouTube channel. So if I get that maximized, then more things should follow.
Don't you sometimes have moments where you think, okay, now I should take what I have with the YouTube channel and approach people for strategic collaborations?
You know what? I haven't really actually, well, I've thought about that, but only in terms of like people on the YouTube channel. So for example, like I was telling you before the podcast, I'm interviewing one of the guys who worked with Steve Jobs on the original iPhone, and he created the keyboard and autocorrect and invented all of those things. And he was keen to just have a chat. I just reached out to him on Twitter, but that was kind of like, yeah, the first time that I'd, maybe not the first time, like I've interviewed some other people, but it's quite rare that I do that. But it's only in the end goal to like boost the clout or quality, I guess, of the episode that I'm doing. So yeah, I reach out, but it's only to make the quality better, really. So
very interesting. Because for me, my job is always reaching out to people that I think are interesting, and I always have to use what I have because it's also not that visible as a YouTube channel that you have. So sometimes interesting also how YouTube from a podcast as a main platform differs. So that's, I just think it's interesting. Maybe I can share some insights on how I approach people and how I pretty easily get interviews with different kinds of people. Because I think that's definitely something that you might like besides the subscribers that you have on the podcast, and also maybe for one or the other interview on the YouTube channel. So, yeah, that's the first thing. I will not hold the session right now. I just, one thing that I realized over, let's say, 180 interviews right now is you just have to ask. It's sometimes so easy to meet people or to talk to them if you ask them. And it's not about selling them something. It's not about pitching them stupid stuff. It's asking and communicating why it's relevant to these people and why you offer value, not why you want to take their time. It's so much about the words you use and how you can communicate what you want to do. And in the moment you're just egoistic, the other person will understand it and will definitely not respond or decline. But sometimes it's pretty simple. You asked me about Guy Kawasaki before, and he was the first episode I published on this podcast. So why? Because if people research what I'm doing, it's easier if they see Guy Kawasaki.
Yeah.
In the beginning. But I just dropped him an email, and I even messed up the email. He told you the story, and it's sometimes so interesting. It's the same with you. We're sitting here because I just randomly dropped you a mail, but I think I made it quite relevant and not just, hey, do you want to be in the podcast? Nice to hear from you.
No, that's true. Like, I guess the way you reached out, like I was like, hey, that could be pretty cool. So like, I think, yeah, asking is something that a lot of people think they can't do, but it's definitely worth a shot if you do it right.
Yeah, everybody thinks that people are so far out of reach, but everybody has a channel where he reads and answers regularly. You should not stalk and try to figure out what the phone number is. That's not what I'm talking about. But everybody has a channel where you can hit them up for questions. Sometimes you have to have the right timing. I think you're more likely to talk to somebody everybody's more likely to talk about something if the person publishes a book, for example, because everybody wants to have more presence about the book and everything. Or if somebody launches a new company or stuff like that. But you have to just really show that you have interest in a person, that you're not a creepy stalker, but also that you put some effort into understanding who the person is and why you want to talk to the person. Yeah. If I would have just called you, hey, or send an email, hey, do you want to go for coffee when you're in Europe? You would have been like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah. No, it's all about the way you do it. Yeah.
So For the next weeks and months, can you give a short explanation of what you're planning to do and what how you will evolve? Because you mentioned a lot of things that you want to do, and I would just love to understand the process that you're planning.
Well, I guess the next few weeks and months are pretty, like a bit of this and that. So like, for example, like in September, I'm going to China because Huawei invited me over. So I'm going to be looking at their AI. I'm going to take a tour of their factory and whatnot, and maybe get some interviews with some people and kind of put out a video on that channel. But that's quite different to what I normally do. But in terms of the rest of the videos, it's going to be, I kind of got a list of stuff I want to do, like a spreadsheet of topics that I want to research and get in production. So it's kind of going to be like every month, 4 or 5 videos, like 3 or 4 of them will be like normal, like 8 to 12 minute videos. And then every month there'll be like a long form 20 minute kind of documentary that I want to put out. So that's kind of like a new kind of format that I want to test out to see, you know, what works best. Cause a lot of people think that sometimes my longer form videos are good, but it takes like a lot of effort. So I want to see if it's kind of worth doing. So yeah, it's just kind of some testing really at the moment.
Definitely looking forward to it.
Okay.
A lot of content to watch then.
Yeah.
So I have done roughly an hour of content a month just from your channel. That's
okay.
Nice.
Okay, wow. Very nice. Very nice.
So basically I have some questions in the end that I always ask that I think are different for every person, and just answer whatever comes to your mind first. A book that you gave away the most.
Gave away?
Yeah.
How do you mean? Like
a book that you gave away to people the most because you think it...
As in recommended?
Yeah. Or gave away for a birthday.
Okay. Well, there is this book called The One Device. I can't remember who it was by, but it's just basically about... The invention of the iPhone, and I found that fascinating. So it's like interviewing all these people who like worked on it and their different stories. There's another one which I find interesting, which I think explains a lot about culture today. It's called, I think it's by John Ronson, called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And it's about like kind of the outrage culture and what's going on and how it kind of came to be, and just some interesting insights into that. Yeah, I think.
No, it's fine. A quote that inspires you the most.
Oh, I don't know.
No worries. A person that inspired you the most?
Okay. I think, you know, as cliche as it is, I think Elon Musk, like mainly because of his work ethic and just how much he works at something and doesn't give up, because he has almost failed at so many projects, but he just keeps putting in the work and he's come out with results. And it's quite rare to see that nowadays in terms of like major shifts in culture being caused by like someone like that.
So you'll also try to get him into the podcast?
Oh, one day.
I heard that he's replying more often on Twitter and sometimes also via email.
Okay.
But I never tried it myself.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
he's a busy man.
Yeah, definitely. I really love the biography of Elon Musk.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to see how early he started and what he did all the time, and definitely recommendable. So I would say end the interview here and leave you guys, as you are here with your girlfriend and some friends for dinner. And I'm very, very thankful for that you took the time. It was very insightful. It was interesting to understand how you started and where you want to go, because it's, if you just see the videos, it's very hard to imagine how much work you put in and what you're thinking about, what you're planning ahead, what's in your mind, how you make decisions and everything I asked. Sometimes it's very interesting to discover about different people. And in this case, I'm very thankful for your time, for the interview, and I'm looking forward to everything that's happening. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks for having me. It was a great podcast.
Thanks. This was the interview with Dogogo, and I think there are a lot of really interesting insights, because I really, as I mentioned in the beginning, love understanding decision processes and how people handle different situations. And I think it was quite easy to see a variety of different takes on how the world works and how he takes his own company forward. And it's so interesting to have a better understanding about a person and to really extract something from other people's points of view to educate yourself and to really understand how you want to look at the world and how you want to move on. So that's also why I brought somebody in for the next episode who is completely different from DeGogo. The next guest is a member of the board of Siemens. And I'm normally not a fan of corporates, but I think if there are some people that drive the company in a certain direction, they have to be on the podcast as well. That's why I was very happy when I was talking to Cedric Neike. And Cedric is member of the board at Siemens. He's normally focusing on all the mobility stuff. He's also focusing on all the startup collaborations and everything that's happening around the startup topic in the Siemens ecosystem. So what we are talking about is from how does Siemens want to develop? What are they doing actually? Because they are so large, they do not only produce hardware products. And then also, how can I as a startup or as a founder or as somebody else get in touch with Siemens and then really try to collaborate with them? Because sometimes I think it's really hard to understand how to work with a corporate, and that's why I was focusing on this topic as well. And I'm, in this case, very, very thankful to NOAA Conference in Berlin, because they introduced me to Cedric, and that's how I got the interview. Here's a short snippet. Thank you very much for listening already, and we will see us and listen us next week. So here's a snippet. Have a great time. My name is Fabian, and I'm really much looking forward to the journey.
How do you see collaboration and partnering with startups if you not want to buy them?
So the idea is you need to be more concrete on both sides as possible. I know that big companies can be scary, complicated, bureaucratic. So when you work, what we try to do is find somebody who has a concrete idea, not only of a POC, but of a small project we can do together. And once you engage in doing a project together with Siemens on whatever technology you have, either as Siemens within Siemens or with customers of Siemens, try to get it, try to prove the value proposition, and then through Siemens, that's the one thing Siemens can bring you is once you have a solution, you can scale. I mean, we're in more than 200 countries in the world. So once you sell it once, we can replicate it. That's what big companies are very good at. They're not always the best at innovation, even if I think we're really good at it, but they're the best at scaling, taking an idea and really sort of scaling it out in the world. So that's my feedback is find a use case, make it the best use case you can, and then try to replicate it as much as you can.